Hello, and welcome back to the Now Age podcast. This week's offering is our monthly Astrocast with resident numinous astrologers, Bess Matassa and Sandy Citron, who are going to be talking us through all of the feels of Pisces season 2019. Pisces season is actually the end of the astrological year. Pisces is the last sign of the zodiac. And so this is a time of year when we're really asked to take stock and think about what it is that we're ready to move on from, what we may have been healing from in the past 12 months, what lessons we may have been learning, and what patterns we may actually be willing now to leave in the past as we look ahead to the rest of the year and think about what fresh new start we can be making energetically, what fresh new imprint we can be making energetically on the world. So it's kind of a deep dive time of the year. Bess and Sandy are going to be talking about the Virgo full moon on February 19th and the Pisces new moon on March 6th. How to sit with challenging feelings and create space for everything that comes up. We're also going to be looking at Venus moving into Aquarius from March 1st through the end of the month, which is all about finding freedom in our relationships. And then, yay, we have Mercury going retrograde in Pisces from March 5th through to March 28th. This will all be about a new way of listening to your emotions and really tapping into your intuition, which may well have some kind of messages from the past to bring back for you to re-look at through kinder and more self-loving eyes. We have also the move of Uranus into Taurus, which is something that astrologers have been thinking about for a while now. This begins, officially begins a whole new 7-year cycle of growth as Uranus moves out of Aries, where it's been for the past 7 years, and into Taurus. This is going to be really about a period for all of us to be transforming our lack mentality into an attitude of abundance in all that we do. I know you're going to love this conversation with Bess and Sandy. They have such a beautiful way of describing the astrological aspects and omens. I'll see you on the other side.
Hi, Numiverse. It's Bess Matassa.
And Sandy Citron.
And we're here to float into the dreamland ethers of Pisces season with you. But before we do, I just wanted to let you know out there listening that we're so happy that you're here. And we're really excited to be able to share the astrology of the coming season each month with you through this offering. And also that we're here for your feedback and we're here for your questions. If there's anything that you'd love for us to discuss or dive into or comments that you have, you can always connect with us through the Numinous and also just DMing us on Instagram, Sandy Citron and Bess Matassa. We also offer readings, astrology and tarot readings, so if that's ever compelling to you. And coming this summer and into the fall, we're going to be offering a lot more astrology learning opportunities and tools, all about using this really potent language to awaken to your full kind of range of humanness in your lives. So we're super excited about that.
Yeah. So in true Aquarius season fashion, which we have just finished, this wonderful Aquarius season that was, we want to know what you want to know. We want to know your questions, your ideas. So ask questions about astrology. Tell us what you're interested in so we can incorporate in future offerings and podcasts.
Yeah. So Aquarius season, before we get into Pisces.
Yeah.
What the hell happened in Aquarius season for you, Sandy Citron?
I did a massive global connection, as wow. One would do in Aquarius season, because Aquarius is all about, you know, as we discussed last month, Aquarius is all about expanding and connecting through new ideas, connecting to a larger community. So I launched my new signature course, Astrology of Self-Help, which brought together all my new mental frameworks and thought processes, and got a great group together and got to start to create a new community. So yeah. It was a lot of thinking and connecting and communicating, very airy, but I'm very airy anyway. So yeah. I was in my element.
Yeah, I was, this is kind of a little off topic, but maybe not really. I was watching birds the other day and thinking about Aquarius and Aquarius season. And like, you know, when the whole formation of birds is going together in one direction and then all of a sudden one like breaks off, And it's always, I've always wondered, like, is that bird idiosyncratically choosing another kind of like lifestyle, or is it like a functionality thing where like one of the birds is sick or gets lost and then drops off? Like, what is really happening with birds? And then I was realizing how little I know and really connect viscerally with the element of air, and just watching it and watching kind of cloud formations crashing into one another and strange bird behaviors. Maybe you know more about this than I do.
Also watching birds recently.
Yeah.
And my epiphany was about it was, it's so different us watching them from the distance. Like, we think that they all know what they're doing together as a flock.
Right.
But they don't have that perspective. Which is another air thing, right?
Oh,
perspective. So they can't see that, like, because I was watching this one bird steal a piece of bread from another bird. And what would happen is, like, the thief would get, like, 3 feet away and no other bird would chase it. And then it would just eat the bread by itself. And I was like, why are these other birds right on its tail?
Right.
You know, like, what are they doing? But then after a couple minutes, like, it would be chased. And then a new bird would become the thief. Steal the bread, and then it would get like a good minute with the bread before the other birds caught on.
Right.
And I was like, oh, they can't see it. They can't tell. They don't have the bird's eye view right now.
Right.
I have the bird's eye view.
Yeah.
So maybe this is all about perspective, and like that one bird that's leaving the group, it doesn't even know who the group is or where they're going.
It's just, it's sort of immersed in the experiential, which is kind of a good segue into Pisces season.
Yeah. But,
so interesting. So you've got a lot of global consciousness in Aquarius season, a lot of thinking, a lot of kind of mental circulation.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, I think two main things were happening. And the one that was really bringing me great solace and expansion, I hope, was your rain trough image from the last episode, where you were talking about this idea of ideas just sort of like coming into the ether and people, them coming down, and like either it comes through you or it comes through someone else, and they're all kind of in this kind of free-for-all space. And right around the time of the Leo moon, I had a very kind of triggering Leo moon kind of creative moment where basically, I saw an idea that I had been working on or working with for years, taken by someone like very publicly and like made into this like big public thing. And it was just very interesting. I mean, it wasn't like, I got into like a legal battle over it or anything like that. But it was this moment where initially I was very like leonine style triggered by the intensity of like, but that was mine and I started that, and like this very proprietary feeling. And then as I kind of watched the whole thing evolve, I was like, no, it's just like in the range. It's like for everyone, and we're just catching and we're channeling, and we're just, it's getting colored by whatever, you know, it's coming through our bodies and then it's out, and it's, and there's no scarcity around that. And then there'll be another, and there'll be another iteration of that. I don't know. It was interesting. So that was that imagery that you provided in the last episode was a real balm for me in working with the creative process in a new way this season. And then secondly, I feel like the question or the phrase, what's underneath, kept coming to me this season. Like, get to the heart of the thing. Like, there'll be like a little buzzy trigger or like a little buzzy feeling about something. And then it's like, but why? Or like, what's underneath? And I never really thought about Aquarius as like a penetrating energy, but it's interesting to think about it in conversation with the other fixed signs, because I see Taurus, Leo, and Scorpio as kind of penetrating energies. They like sink their teeth in, you know, they're kind of in different ways, they're snacking on things. And I always wondered how Aquarius fit with that, but I really felt the kind of surgical quality of Aquarius in this very like lovely circulatory detached way of just like, oh, what's underneath? Oh, I'm having this wild feeling right now. Oh, what do I actually need beneath it? How can I get to the essence? How can I get to what's essential? So I feel like in that way, I made friends with Aquarius season in a way that I hadn't before.
So powerful. Yeah, there is that tenacity, right? Like, you have to be really tenacious to sit with your feelings and to like reframe them mentally in a new way. I had an epiphany during Aquarius season while I was doing an Instagram live that like we always talk about Aquarius being the rebel, And like, you can't be a kind of like weak, like halfway there rebel, right? You have to be a revolutionary, you have to be tenacious. You have to believe and go after it. And I had never put that together before about Aquarius, but of course, you have to be really fixed to follow those ideas to the extreme, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, the kind of juiciness of Aquarius came out to me now, that tenacity that you're talking about. Mm, interesting.
So now we journey forth to Pisces season. How do we traverse those Pisces?
We float, we drift. Yeah, we sort of like ooze, maybe.
We ooze. We scrape ourselves like a half-cooked pancake off the floor.
We follow the edges of the walls. I always, and I think we've spoken before on this podcast about it, but I have a moon in Pisces, a very good friend with moon in Pisces, and she literally, it's like she's dripping sometimes through space. Like, I'll look at her and she just moves with the contours literally of the room. It's almost like one of those things like in a children's like fantasy adventure or something where you see a creature that you can't, it's like camouflage, but then they suddenly like come out of the wall or come out of the backdrop and you're like, ooh. And this is sort of how she's moving. And she's very like fully in her identity and her essence. She's not like behind the scenes or like playing it small, but she's literally moving against the edges of the walls, you know.
That is an incredible observation. I wish I could spend like 30 minutes in your brain and just see things from your perspective.
I don't know. I'd be glad to have you some company.
That would be so nice. Yeah, there's also that, like, does she slip away then and disappear?
She can disappear, yeah, but it's like it's not, it doesn't feel, sometimes there, at least for me as like a non-Piscean creature, sometimes there can feel like an abruptness or a loss or like, what the fuck out? Like, where is this person with like a Piscean energy? But for her, it's like, it's almost like she's just everywhere. So when she's moved away, I still kind of like smell her spirit in the air. Like, it's like she's still there. It's the ooze. It's the residue.
No boundaries. Yeah. That's the big thing we'll probably talk about a lot, is like the dissolving of the boundaries.
Yeah. This is really powerful. I mean, this is the end of the astrological wheel of the year. You know, this is it. This is, Pisces is the final release of the individual identity, this journey that we've made through, you know, the 11 previous signs, and we're prepping for the spring equinox and for the beginning of life again.
But first we have to traverse into the realm of spirit where there is no matter, there is no boundary. Everything is all known at once, interconnected, purely conscious, like pure love.
Yeah.
So, oh, by the way, side note or headline, as I talk about Pisces in general, I find that I lose my words, my sentences trail off. I start speaking telepathically. So you will hear me do that, and I'm not going to apologize for it, because that's just the communication of the sign of Pisces coming through.
Yeah, we were talking before we started recording today about, well, is there a way that we could do this without words? And I think we talked a little bit on the last episode about this as Mercury had moved into Pisces, and we talked a little bit about the end of Chiron in Pisces. Is there a way to represent things? You know, could we like somehow, if we could transmit smells through this microphone to you, or like dust, or, you know, but, you know, we'll try to drill down as much. Drill down is not the word. That's not a very Piscean term at all. We'll try to drift with some degree of consciousness or symbols through the season.
We'll try to be legible.
Legible, exactly. So do you want to give us a window into your world of the overview of the season for you?
So my big grand image for this is what's the most poetic way to describe it? Basically, there's a kitten chasing like a strand of yarn, and then the yarn moves from room to room. Like, it's just this long, long strand of yarn that goes in between rooms and around bends and under the couch and then up over a table. And like, is there ever, do we get to the end of the yarn ever? But the kitten is having a great time because it doesn't really care.
Yeah.
That there's no like beginning or end to this yarn.
Oh my God. I feel like I'm going to really have to spend some time with this one. It feels in many ways deeply connected to the thing that was coming through for me. It was a network the first things that I kind of interfaced with this season were through song. And immediately I had this song in my mind of Everything But the Girls Missing. You know, the song that's like, I miss you like the deserts miss the rain.
Oh, yeah.
And to unpack that a little bit, I connected to this feeling in this season of longing and quote unquote loss, but working with longing in a way that doesn't mean lacking. That what if you felt into the longing for something, or the longing for something that's perceived to have passed, or what you may perceive of as loss, but it doesn't feel like lack or emptiness. And there's this kind of feeling tone in that song where she's back at the apartment building again, the person has moved, but there's also this like kind of melancholy, very like adult, or at least I pictured when I was a kid, the experience of being an adult would be to like walk darkened city streets at night and have like loved and lost many people, you know? Like that was my whole image of like adulthood, or just be like standing looking out at crazy cityscapes and just to think of like all of like the loves and the losses, or you know, the living that happened. And there's this feeling of like she's holding it in that song. And it's also really interesting to think about the deserts miss the rain, because the deserts don't really miss the rain. They're like a self-contained ecosystem that survives with a certain amount of minimal water. But at the same time, there's a missing that's happening, but it's not a missing as a lack. And so that was the first song that came through to me, and then a bunch of others, but I'll talk about those later. But then the image was an interconnected image, one of like a viewfinder or viewmaster, you know, from what, like 80s.
It was like chunky red plastic.
Yeah, you could put these little slides in them. They were like an 80s like toy. And then you could see these images in the viewfinder, and they had this incredible depth. You know, it was like this, it was like prototypical virtual reality. But you couldn't, there was this feeling of longing, at least that I experienced when I would look into those scenes, where I was like, I want to go into the, because they had such depth, or I want to like see around the corner in the image, but I can't quite get there. But I was able still to like hold that longing in a way that I actually felt really loving and expansive, rather than a frustration of why I couldn't get into this image. And it's connected to a scene in Blade Runner, like the original Blade Runner, with Harrison Ford, where he, you know, he's like, it's like the future filtered through, you know, the 80s, whatever, the mid 80s lens. And he, it's a similar kind of thing where he's working with kind of a futuristic device to be able to look into a photograph, and he's trying to get around the corner kind of in the photograph. And you realize, you know, like he can see a little bit into the tub to see this kind of piece of snakeskin that he needs in order to like, you know, do his work and like track down the replicant or whatever. But it's the same kind of feeling of like, how do we actually abide with the places we can't get to with the mind? And how do we work with longing in a way that doesn't feel like lack? So that was my initial kind of like firings of, did you have a viewfinder?
Really good. I did have one. I think it was like, I don't have strong memories of, like, I remember it very, like, I get the shape of it in my hands, but I don't really remember what I would see when I looked into it. I remember it being cool. It was like, now kids have iPhones and actual virtual reality, so they don't need that. I thought of, like, I think I had probably watched Alice in Wonderland or something at one point, and, like, I got that the, like, idea about, like, a mirror and, like, looking into a mirror and, like, what that world was about through the mirror. I mean, it had probably been fed this somehow through something I saw. But I do remember really staring into a mirror and being like, that's another world I can't get to.
Yeah.
I don't know if I really want to go to it, but, like, what is over there?
Right.
That whole, so I can definitely relate. It is really similar to that yarn that doesn't, like, where does it go?
Where does it go? Yeah, where does...
Is there an end? Was there a beginning? Do you, you know, is it, like, probably the difference would be the emotional difference, where the kitten was kind of, like, having fun, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, well, whatever. And then in that longing emotion is quite different. So I think that's something for us all to remember as we navigate through the season, is that both are there.
Yeah.
And that we can really allow space for both and accept them as they come.
Yeah. And this idea of acceptance, I mean, I feel so often we hear Pisces discussed with the concept of like surrender, let go, and these become almost like free-floating signifiers, I feel like, in like the health and wellness. Because it's like, how do I even begin to do that? Oh, just surrender. Oh, let go. Like, let it go. And I feel like with Pisces energy, it starts with allowing and allowing a wider container around the thing, you know? And if you can't figure out kind of how to like, how do I just surrender this or how do I let it go? Like that Piscean quality of allowing, non-judgment, whatever you kind of want to, like widening the parameters to hold both and a multiplicity of things, like the greatest range of possibility that you ever could, you know, in terms of, you know, because sometimes I feel like we get caught up in this feeling of like, oh, Pisces is just like fusion and egolessness. And, but there still is, there's an eye in the center that's just, that's in a bed of stars or in this like vast, vast sea that's placed there, but is also like allowing for that width or that breath or, and I feel like in your image of the kitten, there is that, the kind of like, oh, where the cord goes or the linearity of it is, you know, beside the point. There's a just, there's a much wider like way I can engage with this moment.
Totally. So right away when the sun moves into Pisces, we have a full moon, as has been, that's been going on.
That's been happening. Until Aries season. Maybe this might be our last when they start to flip.
Again. Yeah. So the sun moves into Pisces on February 18th, and we had talked about this last time, that's the same day that Chiron moves into Aries, right? So should we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a major player in this moon, so we can
pretty important.
Touch on that.
Okay, good. So we have Chiron moves into Aries February 18th, and on February 19th, we have this full moon in Virgo. Did you have any symbolism for this one?
Yeah, this one, it almost felt like, I didn't have a specific image necessarily, but it was almost like this idea of like watching something in a rear view mirror just recede. And that idea of almost like becoming empty. Like how can you take this moon as an opportunity to listen rather than in listening. I mean like listening in like a very, not just like listening with your ears, but listening with every surface of your body. And when we listen, we have to empty ourselves to a certain degree in order to be kind of become, let the thing come through, whatever the thing is. So that was like my first thought with this moon, especially with Chiron moving into Aries, where Aries energies at one octave of expression so often wants to like force the thing or make the thing happen, and like we're getting this very sensitized energy of Chiron, you know, colliding with this very forceful, willful kind of energy of Aries. And it felt like, can there just be like letting a thing recede that needs to recede without, as simply as, not that you can't have like longing and feelings of loss and intensity about that, but as simple as just like literally looking in a rearview mirror and letting the thing start to, whatever the thing is, or the behavior or the pattern that's kind of slipping out of. And somehow it was connected in my mind to the idea of emptying and the idea of like being making your body, your energetic body, a greater surface of listening.
Yeah. The holding space for just let it happen and let it pass by.
Yeah.
Without judging it. So much conversation here during this Pisces season, I think, about non-judgment and acceptance. It's like a good 4 weeks to read When Things Fall Apart or something like that. Some Buddhist text that reminds us of non-attachment. That would be really a thing to do. Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah. And to be surprised at where that might lead you. You know, so often when we get into like polarized thinking or binary thinking or, you know, any kind of like, this is the way it is or it was, there's just this whole Pisces wants to crack us open to possibilities we couldn't even, you know, we couldn't even dream up in that kind of binary way of relating.
Yeah. For this full moon in Virgo, what popped into my mind was like an herbal apothecary kind of situation, but it was like, actually it was a memory. This kind of makes sense. It was like a memory vision I had from a past life regression I did.
Ooh, and very Pisces.
Yeah, that's very Pisces, right? It's like all the lives. I've lived all the lives, right? So in this vision, it was like I had collected some herbs that I took them back to my little cabin. And I had like a whole setup with all these different jars, and the herbs were dry. Like I had dried the herbs and I had them all in their own little glass jars in the window. It was like my little pharmacy. And this is so Virgo, moon in Virgo, full moon, with the Pisces feeling too of like let's understand our interconnectedness to nature, and that healing ourselves, can be holistic and yet also very precise. And like we can keep things in our little jars and our glass jars, and we can get it all sorted out and organized, and we can take good care of ourselves, but we don't have to do it. We can do it in a really integrated way. We can try to. That's the issue with the full moon, is that there's this opposition. And so it's a push and pull of energy, and that's why it's such high energy at a full moon, is that there's part of us that wants to get really mechanical and like scientific and organized, and then there's this other part of us that wants to experience the whole and dissolve and not pay any like attention to the details. And so this kind of like natural pharmacy felt pretty relevant.
Yeah, when you're speaking, it's making me feel into, I don't know, sometimes I feel like this, the Pisces energy, it's like, well, I gotta just, you know, immerse myself in it completely, or just dive into the feeling landscape, or just like be with the ghosts, or like whatever the feeling is. And when you're speaking, I'm feeling into the notion that it doesn't have to be all at once. Like if things are coming up for you, like they can come up, but there can also be kind of a classification of those things, or a feeling of like a bit by bit kind of, and that doesn't need to feel like you're pushing things away or you're repressing things or, you know, suppressing certain parts of your experience, that there can be a filtration with this moon too. Even if you're feeling super big feelings or things are coming through from the past, or you're feeling around loss of, you know, anything in your life, an emotional pattern or relationship, that there, you can still kind of drip it out for yourself, or somehow kind of put it into those bottles, you know, in a way that's tolerable to you, you know, for wherever you are on your journey. I also, one of the cards that I drew for the entire season, but I feel like it's deeply connected to this Virgo full moon, was the Four of Pentacles. And, you know, this has a lot of different interpretations, but I always get the image with this card of like weatherizing, being like on a solo, like a solo ski lodge, having a winter retreat for yourself and your own spirit and your own integrity, and sealing up the building, like making sure your building where you're staying in this kind of metaphorical ski lodge is weatherized. But then I was thinking, well, how does that kind of relate to the Piscean breakdown and dissolution of boundaries? And it feels almost, were we talking about the cat flap last podcast? I think I was talking maybe in a reading to somebody about the cat flap.
I think we were talking about it.
We were. The cat flap, like those little doors where the cats come in and out of the buildings, you know. Can there both be an integrity to your emotional experience at this moon where you're able to create boundaries that you need to create for that? You're able to kind of seal up parts of your life and, you know, draw a line or say a no. All this kind of Virgo energy around really knowing the specificity of the self and the availability to kind of to show that and to be kind of out interfacing, and this Pisces total like flooding of the, you know, Pisces wouldn't weatherize the house at all. It'd be like a full flooding of the elements. There'd be no walls. And can there be both things? And then I kept thinking of this little like cat flap door, or how do you both create a necessary container for yourself at this moon, but also make sure that you're not sealing to the extent where you can't let anything circulate, or I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, it definitely makes sense. This is not a fully formed idea, but I already made my disclaimer about Pisces season, and we're just drifting along here. So you had said earlier, the desert meets the rain, that everything but the girls, does the desert miss the rain? That everything but the girl song, which just took me way back. Like when you said that, I was like, oh my God, where am I now? But you said that the desert was a self-contained ecosystem. And I really liked it when you said that, because it does remind me of this moon too, with like the desert being the Virgo side of things. Like, well, I've got all the things I need. Here I am. And I'm going to, the lizards are crawling around and we've got this like nice bio material on top of the sand, and if anything disrupts it, it's all gonna go to hell. So we need to keep that intact, and like, you know, like everything's self-contained. And then the rain would be the Pisces, this like rainstorm coming in and drowning the desert, and like that does happen, and that's good. So like I said, this isn't a fully formed idea, but there's something there about that message of like where are you self-contained and where are you going to let it all go? And like you said, that cat flap, like how can you create little tunnels that connect both sides? So that, because the thing with Pisces season is that, and Pisces in general really, is that we're carrying so much compassion and emotion that we can shut down really quickly and not feel any of it.
Right.
And so when we can take care of ourselves in small ways and like really be self-contained and have our little boundaries and have our little routines, then it makes us more available to actually stay present and not lose all of the, not just drift away or slip away, and actually then maintain a spacing container and work with that, all those deep emotions, and be present and be intuitive and be connected, and it's all working effectively.
Yeah.
So,
and I feel like, you know, it bears mentioning, at least how I'll be interested to hear what you feel. But I feel like Pisces and Virgo energy, to me, these are the two most sensitive, I'll put that in quotation marks, signs of the zodiac. And Pisces is psychically sensitive. It's perceiving emotional content in the ether constantly. You know, there's this the boundarylessness, and that kind of the way that this, the emotional body skin is touched by the environment, is so potent. And then with Virgo, it's the environmental cues, and the physical body is constantly affected. And I think sometimes what we forget with Virgo too is that it's a mutable sign. It is about learning and adapting through that element. So it is literally the shifting sand. It is the grains, you know, of the sand that has to be available too for those shifts and those kinds of meanings of the moment. So this is also a season to really to let yourself be sensitized by the world, to let that be, you know, what your the potency of your feelings, and your, to let yourself be affected by the environment, but also to take, like what you're saying, to be able to kind of take good care and to kind of shore up some of that when you're feeling in a bit of overload.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some good action available at this full moon. So, you know, taking those action steps, whatever they are, to either do something creative or do something to take care of yourself, or do something to help someone else. You know, full moon in Virgo is about being of service too. Mars is trine the moon, so that's great for action. And, you know, Chiron just moved into Aries, as we mentioned, so you may feel a strong urge to take action
on maybe washed away
your feelings. So that's
Do you, I need to ask this because I was feeling into this image and I can't really properly remember the narrative, but this whole season was feeling, it was bringing up Labyrinth to me. And when you were speaking about, does she, when she goes into the world in Labyrinth, she goes through the mirror or she goes through the closet? I can't remember.
In the Labyrinth, doesn't he just steal her away? I can't remember. Through. He steals the baby.
Yeah. And then she goes through something.
Right? I don't remember that.
But then it's like, I was thinking of that phrase, to take back the child you have stolen. Like that whole narrative at the end, I think David, or she's saying it to David Bowie, I don't remember. But there's something in the narrative of Labyrinth, because there is this, and I feel like sometimes I overuse the word innocence, but there is this feeling with we're coming to the end of this kind of cycle of the wheel of the year. And there is this feeling when we move from Pisces to Aries, like, how do we bridge that gap between the oldest soul of the zodiac and this kind of freshness, this innocence? And with Chiron and Aries, kind of staking a claim. It's not really staking a claim, but just feeling into the concept of innocence as strength, and the places you might have disowned in yourself that are the little kid places, or the sweeter places from like a sweeter, softer time, maybe of a heart, that your heart was more widely open. I don't know, something around noticing where you've started to steel yourself against the world. This feels like a season for the opposite of steeling yourself in some ways, as much as you want to obviously take good care and not, you know, be like promiscuously opening yourself to, you know, hurt that doesn't need to be felt anymore, that there is a sense of softening, you know, deep softening.
Yeah. This is a pretty emotional season, this one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, knowing that, like, whether you're listening to this in the beginning or the middle or towards the end, like, it's not just because this is a Pisces season. There's, you know, that Chiron move into Aries is going to bring up all kinds of new content that needs to be sifted through. Of course, that's going to be a long journey, but at the beginning, it's very potent. And so, you know, do go visit your little pharmacy of your little herbs, you know, that you've stored, and see what you have that you can use that can be helpful. Yeah. Like, really grounded, really practical. Like, what tools do you have that can actually be helpful, not just for you, but for the other people that you know too?
Yeah.
Not to go overboard with it, because you don't have to, like, you know, do that whole Piscean caretaking thing either. But, oh, you know what I just realized? I thought Mother Teresa, always thought she must have so much Pisces, and I just looked at her chart. She's a Virgo.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like, I always thought she had so much Pisces because of this compassion, the love, the heart, the full, like, I'll take care of everyone.
Yeah.
But no, she's the Virgo, which is like, no, I'll actually take care of it.
Yeah,
actually. Like, I'll go do
along this wall and disappear into ether.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, too, I mean, there's just also to know this season that you can hold more than you might think that you can hold. Like, I always, especially with, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Mercury retro in Pisces and it traveling close to Neptune, which is the ruler of Pisces. And this feeling of just take a moment to consider all of the stories you've already lived and all of the stories that live beneath your skin. And when you get on the train, or if you're, you know, in a crowded area, and considering the insane intricacy of the emotional lives of everybody around you, like, you can hold it. You can hold it. You know, you can hold so much more. I don't know. I think in the tarot with the figure of the King of Cups, and actually I've been watching High Maintenance. Have you watched High Maintenance at all?
I love it.
I feel like the guy, you know, the guy who's the main character is such a consummate Piscean, like, King of Cups figure, because he's able to enter into all these spaces. And it's not that he's, like, losing himself or his essence in any way, but he just has this huge container for the possibilities of the moment and all of these dynamics and beings that he encounters and matter that they dredge up. And he's just able, like, I was watching the episode where he goes in and helps the older man, like, fix or get into his apartment with the keys. And then it just leads to this entire time where he's just, like, there for, you know, an hour helping this guy, like, sort through all of the aspects of his life. Yeah. And there's just so many moments in that show where it's not that he's, like, losing himself completely in that. It's just that he's able to kind of rise to meet the moment in that emotional way. So, to if you haven't watched it, maybe check it out and use that as your patron. Your patron.
Okay, so far our reference guide for you is Pema Chodron, When Things Fall Apart, High Maintenance. We had one other thing.
Everything with the Girl.
Everything with the Girl. Watch The Labyrinth.
Yeah, The Labyrinth.
This is your guidebook.
Blade Runner.
I haven't seen that.
And get yourself. I feel like I've literally seen Blade Runner maybe like 200 times. My father growing up was obsessed and made me watch every new potential version that would come out, like with narration, without narration, like blah, blah, blah. And he was an artist, so he would often watch it without the sound on too and just sit really close to the screen, and it's like visually it's crazy.
That's a Pisces.
Yeah.
You know, any, even if it sounds like we're segueing, we're not, because everything is related. This is how Pisces goes. Sitting so close to a television screen, just watching the images of a movie like Blade Runner is so Pisces.
Being immersed, letting yourself also be immersed. And I know that there's, you know, that can bring up a lot, like, oh my, I mean, the obvious, like, will I drown? Will I lose myself if I let myself get fully immersed in a situation where I fully give myself with this person or whatever the thing is? But there's a certain amount of safety in that during Pisces season that you can really immerse yourself in the, in whatever's coming up, and knowing that you're going to be able to kind of survive or pop out of the wave or whatever the thing is.
So speaking of surviving, well, there's a couple of things now that we want to talk about.
Yeah.
We've got Venus moves into Aquarius March 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got our Mercury retrograde that starts on March 5th and goes until March 28th. So pretty mm-hmm. much all of March. So let's start with Venus in Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
An unlikely friend.
Unlikely friend. Literally. Yeah. Venus is like, Venus being like the planet of relating, and Aquarius being the unlikely, unlikely energy.
Yeah.
An unlikely friend. An unexpected caller.
An unexpected caller. Embracing your most bizarro side and just using that to relate with people. Loving yourself. Accepting yourself no matter who you are. But accepting others, too.
Yeah.
It's a union.
I feel like whenever Venus moves into an air sign, there is an invitation around relationship concepts. Like, air energy is quite conceptual, can be quite conceptual. So there can be this feeling of, well, I know the kind of partner I want to meet. Or I know this. Or I know kind of the ideal or the kind of structural kind of like the outlines of, mm-hmm. of the person or the mode of relating. And Aquarius is kind of a funny one because there is that concept, but there's also like the radicalization or like the willing radicalization of that concept. So I feel like it's a powerful season for deconstructing perhaps some of your modes of relating or relationship expectations. Or if you're someone that might have kind of like a list of like, these are my like hard yeses and these are my no's, or this is something I'll never tolerate in a relationship. Not that you should like, you know, throw those all out the window, but that there is a feeling into rising to meet the being or the beings in front of you through friendship, through romantic relationship with your full presence, and just sort of noticing where that kind of can collide sometimes with the already baked notion or the kind of pan that you've already, the structural kind of constraints that you've already put around relationship, and being also available to be in the moment for relating.
Yeah. Be like really willing to be surprised.
Yeah.
At how different you can relate or find pleasure, how differently that can happen than you ever thought it could before, and maybe how you might be very ready for a revision of what you're template for pleasure and relating looks like.
Yeah. I was reading recently some Taoist writing, and they were talking about the term relationship versus the term relatedness. And it feels very Venus in Aquarius. You know, if we've been coming out of Venus in Capricorn, which in one expression of the energy can more kind of be contractual or like, let's commit to this one kind of bond, or let's see this through in this one kind of linear mode. Venus in Aquarius feels much more like relatedness, like we're just rising to recommit every day. And I think we spoke maybe in Libra season when you were getting married around this concept of, and yes, like there can be contracts or there can be this durational commitment. And also we're just showing up moment to moment, and mm-hmm. who the hell knows? And this is an energy to invite into your partnerships, not to say that you have to, like, if you're in a durational partnership, you need to like radicalize it or run away or like freak out, you know, but that there can be also an accommodation of the preciousness of that, especially in the context of Pisces season where, God, it's just like every feeling is like this precious little like package that, oh my God, I get to like be alive and feel this. And I feel like there's an opportunity to move into that kind of concept of relatedness with Venus and Aquarius that allows more kind of expansion or more just gratefulness that we can kind of like keep being in relation, you know, in relation to one another.
Yeah, especially with the Mercury retrograde then starting on the 5th, because as we know, Mercury rules communication, and when it appears like it's moving backward, communication shifts and it changes. And so if we're talking about relationships, that's really important yeah. to know how you're communicating, what it is you're actually communicating, in the sense like, what does the other person think you said?
Right.
You know, like you might have thought you said one thing and that is not what was picked up on the other side, and that's communication, right? So everything, you know, there's a lot of new 2.0 kind of stuff that's possible in and around relating, and so also make sure you're being clear.
Yeah.
What else about this Mercury retrograde? So it's going to be in Pisces. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is the first of, is it 3 or 4 Mercury retrogrades in water? Well, it's got to be 3. They're all in water signs. And I feel like, you know, anytime a planet starts, you know, shifts into retrograde mode, there's almost this feeling of behind the scenes, or how can you know the planet at school and then you have a slumber party with it. And so this is, I mean, it's a huge time for also just feeling into how you can speak to yourself with more allowing, more of a sense of kindness, more of a, you know, obviously we all have modes of speaking to ourselves that we would never use to anyone else that we loved or claim to love or care about. And I feel like this Mercury retro in Pisces is a really sweet opportunity to be kind of redrafting your internal love letters to self. And also to play into that, you know, that image of the cat and the yarn and the kind of traceable with the visual eye parts of the Viewmaster or whatever it is, that, you know, how do you relate to the things that you can't get to with your mind? Like, how do you create a space for those things? What does that actually feel like? Does it feel like through your physical body that you have a practice of encountering information? Or, you know, I don't want to like overuse the word, you know, intuitive or intuition, but it is a huge kind of opportunity to feel into how you access knowledge that isn't mental. You know, are you somebody who feels things in your stomach? Are you somebody who, you know, smells things, or whatever the kind of modalities that you have to encounter and experience and process emotions and information that aren't mental? This is a great transit to explore that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, you know, it's a review, a redo. So I could see this being like, hey, let's redo how we are compassionate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I could also see this being, hey, let's review how much of a victim I am. So, you know, both and all, right? It's probably both of those things in different moments. And so, like, being able to really tune in to how you're feeling and remembering that that is the information that's most important now, as you're saying, Bess, and like, how do you get that information? For a lot of us, it does come through our body sensations.
Mm-hmm.
Pisces, to me, even though it's not like a disembodied air sign, it always does feel like, oh, I forgot I have a body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting that this is kind of colliding with, you know, the next day, right after Mercury goes retrograde in Pisces, we have Uranus mm-hmm. shifting into Taurus for its forward motion, which is like major news. And I know we've talked about it a number of times on this podcast, but this is its entry into Taurus for the long haul for the next 7-ish years.
Yeah.
And this is total, the liberation, the revolution of our relationship to our body, to security, to worth, to value, radical receiving, you know, how are we receiving things? So I feel like in many ways it dovetails kind of nicely, you know, Pisces and Taurus are, you know, are are friends. They're in like a sextile to one another in astrology, which means they're sort of in a dazzling snowflake of potential and curiosity and opportunity to collaborate. And I feel like there is also a real opportunity right during this Mercury retrograde to be able available to just take up things from the environment in new ways into our body, and to be available for pleasure in new ways, but also for receiving directionality and answers, quote unquote, through the physical and energetic body in ways that we hadn't been before, that were kind of trumping the mind in some ways at this time.
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about romance lately. Like, is romance like something you can do? You know, like is romance something you can just do if you're stressed out? Can you do romance for yourself?
Well, I used to really be obsessed with the term romance for a number of reasons, but I feel like I used to use it a lot in, I don't know, at one point when I was like trying to figure out like, what am I actually here to do? Like, what is my mission actually, like on an energetic level, like as a being? And I was like, I think it's to bring romance to the mundane. Mm-hmm. And I started looking into kind of the definitions of romance and like what the concept was. And now I'm like forgetting the specific definition, but outside of the context that we know it as, like, you know, romance or romantic, you know, mm-hmm. being this very one kind of mode of relating, it's about, I'll have to look up the specific definition again, but injecting a sense of the mysterious mm-hmm. into the everyday in some senses. It's to create, you know, a heightened kind of experience of the mundane. And it feels so Taurus Pisces
yes.
collision, and exactly what you're saying.
Yes.
You can do it.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, I think there's a key here.
Yeah.
This is a new idea that just floated through my brain, and I'm glad I'm here with Bess, whose job it is to bring romance into the mundane, because I knew you would have an answer. But yeah, like this, at this time, there's so much going on. We've been talking about like ways to stay centered within it all. But this whole idea about romance matches the Pisces template and the Taurus template, because it can help you feel into the mystery, as you so well said, and also use that in a sensual way that like grounds you in your body, so you don't disappear and become disembodied, but instead you revolutionize your whole sensation of life on Earth, which is what Uranus and Taurus is doing for us, yeah. breaking open the physical realm so that we can be more in our bodies, so maybe we don't ruin the earth and we like eat better food and we learn how to just be here and know the worth of it all without having to own it all.
Yeah. Yeah, because Taurus at its, you know, its kind of highest, I feel like I often say the highest octave of expression, and I do mean that, but I don't mean that there's the lowest octave of expression mm-hmm. is like bad and the highest is good. But one iteration of Taurus energy can be out of alignment to feel like, where's my next meal going to be coming mm-hmm. from? Like literally and metaphorically, versus this sense of like this endless buffet and this ability to be available to, obviously there's like material constraints and, you know, everyone's in relationship with, you know, whatever you want to call it, abundance is kind of an overused term, but fullness and or feeling like they have the safety to feel full. But this is the start of a huge revolutionary cycle about how we fill ourselves too. So I feel like this idea in the beginning of like longing not as lack is really firing through Uranus and Taurus too. How can you really delight in desire without it feeling like lack? That feeling of like, I want, or ooh, it would be good to have, or like what that space is between when I go to like get, you know, whatever the treat that I'm gonna eat, or, you know, make the love I'm gonna have, or whatever it is, but that there's a romance, there's a, you know, there's, I don't know, there's a feeling that you can, this transit is asking you to find new sources of fullness, or asking you to both find new sources of fullness and also shift your perception of what lack is or what emptiness feels mm-hmm. like.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a book I think I've mentioned before. It's called The Soul of Money.
Oh,
and it's
yeah.
by Lynn Twist. And she mm-hmm. talks about this, like that cultural, that pervasive to our world at this time in humanity, we all have like a scarcity complex, or like a scarcity, I can't remember what she calls it exactly, but the scarcity wound.
Yeah.
And that's the driving behind all dysfunction in all of our society, because it creates greed, and then it creates like all of the pervasive, you know, we have enough food on earth to feed everyone, but it can't get to the right places because of scarcity mentality. That's what she calls it. And so with Uranus coming into Taurus, you know, my two cents is like, well, maybe that will help us disrupt. If I'm being the most positive I can, maybe that over the next 7 years is going to help us make some steps to shifting from a scarcity mentality to an abundance mentality. Let's put a pin in that idea.
We'll talk about this over the next 7 years and see how it plays out. So right as Uranus moves into Taurus, just a few hours later, I think, I forget the exact time, but that same day, we have a new moon in Pisces. And at this point, the sun and the moon are conjunct Neptune.
This is really sealing the deal. So I think like that crystallization of energy that happens, we go into like a little portal when the sun and the moon either become exactly conjunct or exactly opposite. And it's like a chance for like a whole new kind of energy to be created in the world. And so the fact that that happens so close to Uranus moving into Taurus is profound. And I'm just going to say, oh, wait, I did have this image for this, but let's see if I can remember it. Of course, it's Pisces season, so I didn't write
ideas
it down.
You don't need to grip on the idea. That's another thing with Uranus and Taurus is is opening the grip or the grasp, because Taurus there can be an element of holding the thing tightly in your hand once you get it. And Uranus is like ripping your palm wide open to let it fly, which is very Piscean as well.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to present a menu of options for you. And so this is what I think about this new moon in Pisces, and there's a menu here. So on one end, you could choose, and we'll probably all choose both of these things, so that's fine. On one end, with this new moon in Pisces, you can choose romance. That's what we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. So I don't need to go into that too much. Mm-hmm. On the other end, you could choose Fire Festival.
Fire Festival.
Which, Vess, you didn't know about.
I didn't know about Fire Festival.
So there's now two documentaries, one on Hulu and one on Netflix. Okay. And you have to go watch either one. Okay. I have only seen the Netflix one. You have to watch. So this adds to the reference library for this. But you may know what Fire Festival is, listener, or if not, go ahead and Google it. But it happened, I think, last year, and it was like building up the big dream. This like mad delusion of like there were no numbers behind it. It didn't make any sense. It was like a pure, you know, it was like this great marketing like dream that was built up by all these influencers posting. It was like great pictures, and it was like, we're gonna have this amazing festival on an island in the Caribbean, and you know, it's just gonna be the most beautiful locale, everything's amazing, so luxurious, top luxury, pay a bunch of money, come do this thing. And then like nothing about it worked, and it was like a disaster. There were literally like hurricane tents were like the lodging with like wet mattresses and like cheese sandwiches and styrofoam for like tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh,
it was anyway. So this could be a very delusional. This could be a very delusional moon that could, you know, for some and for, you know, like I said, there's a menu here. Like either romance on one end, on the other end, there could be, you know, you build up the delusion in your mind and you get there and you're like sleeping in a wet hurricane tent. Somebody's, you know, like,
how do you, if someone was going to choose that menu option, what would be some tools that they might bring along?
Yeah, let's go back over to the apothecary. Let's go back over to our glass jars.
What little jars would they need to deal with that?
I mean, the truth is that we're all in denial about something all the time, right? that's like was it Elizabeth Kubler-Ross kind of idea of like we're all grieving something all the time, and so we're all also denial is a stage of grief, and so we're all always in denial about something. And that's not a bad thing, you know, like by itself. And so maybe it's not the best, but you know, just accepting that like, hey, there's probably something I'm not seeing right now. A great question, and I remember I really asked myself this a lot last spring, was like, is like a good morning journaling thing for this season would be, what do I need to see that I'm not seeing?
I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and if seeing isn't the way you like to write, you know, what do I need to know that I'm not knowing? Or what do I need to feel that I'm not feeling? Yeah. You know, you could even ask yourself all those things. What do I need to taste that I'm not tasting?
Yeah, I need to taste a lot of things. it's interesting that you're saying this, this like seeing and the just sort of grappling and abiding with the, whatever the denial is, which is not, you know, there's no judgment around that. It's just sort of the existing state. Because one of the songs that kept coming through for me for this new moon was, and I think originally it's probably like a 60s song, and then I think it had a disco version to it, and then it also had a 90s dance mix version to it in the movie, the 90s movie, like Studio 54. Maybe it was like around the early aughts when they did like, it was like Neve Campbell and Ryan Felipe. Anyway, the lineage of that is not important, but... the song is If You Can Read My Mind. If you could read my mind, what a tale my thoughts would tell. I don't know. Google it. It's if you could read my mind. And there's one line in it that says, I will never be set free if I'm a ghost that you can't see. And it felt so deeply connected to this moon's energy of a sweetness around what's being denied, what might be being denied or not fully envisioned or tasted or whatever we want to say, that there can be an abiding with that, a holding of that thing. And through the holding of the thing that doesn't want to be seen maybe yet, it shows itself in a certain way too. And then the other thing that I was thinking about with this new moon, and this was like kind of an abstract, I guess it's also connected to what we were talking about in the beginning with the oozing. but the idea of residue, and I think we talked probably primarily in Capricorn season about this idea of legacy and the kind of legacy you're leaving and the kind of high stakes energy of Capricorn that can be quite a beautiful offering of, well, what do I want to endure? What do I want to deposit here? And I feel like this comes back in Pisces season and through this new moon in kind of a different flavor, because new moons are initiating energies. They are kind of intention setting, you know, beginning of a new cycle energies. And it's really interesting to have a new moon in Pisces, which is so much about ending, dissolving, all of that. So I was thinking about literal residue and almost like movies or imagery in literature where there's a character and then they get like spirited away. And then there's like a little pile of something where they've been, you know, like it's like a pile of little glitter, or maybe it's just like their shoes are left behind or like whatever the thing is. And it's, so it's almost like thinking about what residue you're leaving. This could be a simple, I mean, it sounds kind of like gross, like your like spiritual slug trail or something, but like what spiritual slug trail are you leaving? Like as you move through spaces, you know, maybe it's like considering how you kind of enter and exit spaces, or when you're with another person, like what is kind of, what do you think gets kind of deposited and is left with that person or left in that space as you depart, you know, and thinking about that as a form of legacy that might not be like, oh, I'm gonna like make this project and then I'm gonna publish this book and it'll be, you know, published after my death, or some of these kind of harder contoured Capricornian legacies, like what kind of energetic residue do you want to leave in as you go through space? I don't know. Like
that is such a cool idea.
Spiritual slug trails.
I love that. I just imagine these glittery slugs. Yeah. You know, but it's so real. I mean, I can think of right off the top of my head a couple of people that, you know, I had just like one short conversation with, and just the way they held their energy, it was a gift.
Yeah.
You know, that I got to feel that energy and then kind of model it for myself, or, you know, not take it or anything, but it was just like their contained energy, being able to be around it helped me see a part of humanity that I needed to see at that moment.
That your presence can be a healing. You don't even know, you know, like, and I don't know, something to,
it's really cool,
feel into.
Yeah. So we got this new moon. The sun is conjunct Neptune at this new moon, and the moon, the sun and the moon, conjunct to Neptune. That's a rhyme. And it's very dreamy. We already talked about that. Mm-hmm. Then, until March 20th, there's not a whole lot popping. March 13th, the sun is square Jupiter. So I pulled out that transit, just to kind of say like, hey, that's a moment right there to expand, to put yourself out there, see what comes your way, not with over efforting, but just like tune into where you want your vibration to be, because if you can, you know, lift up your vibration purposefully, that can really open a doorway for some expansion to follow. That's the way I like to think about Jupiter. Do you want to add anything there?
I mean, I feel like this kind of end of the month, well, it's almost like middle end of, or of the season rather, between March 6th and March 20th, it almost feels like the word that comes to me in the absence of like some major transits and considering all that we've spoken to that's happened up to this point, the word gravity really feels resonant to me. Like letting, it's almost like that rearview mirror thing too, where you're letting the thing recede. Like what is already just sort of in motion, or what is already falling away from your person that you can just kind of like let gravity do the work on, mm-hmm. you know? And this is it can be really a time of quietude and a time of stillness and solitary, you know, the kind of end of Pisces season before we kind of burst into bloom and burst into being in mm-hmm. Aries season. And where can you let gravity kind of do its work in your life almost, mm-hmm. and slough off what needs to be sloughed off, or, you know, slug trail what needs to be trailed, whatever it is that this is, there's kind of a gift in this, the second part of this season, to allow in that way.
There was one thing we had said we wanted to talk about. I feel like it ties in here, but as my memory is a little foggy.
Spiritually stoned.
Yeah. And so right before we did this recording, Bess pulled a tarot card for us. Mm-hmm. And it was the Ten of Swords.
The Nine of Swords.
The Nine. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
The Nine of Swords.
Yeah. And you were talking about it connected to your Vipassana experience.
Yeah. And so when I did that a couple months ago in November, I did a Vipassana retreat where I meditated for 10 days. And on the fifth day, they teach you Vipassana. And they tell you that it's kind of like, you know, the fifth and the sixth days can be a little bit intense because you're going through like a subconscious surgery basically. Mm. And the whole night of like the fifth night, I was like sitting up in bed, basically like, if you know what is that deck I have?
The Rider-Waite-Smith.
Yeah. If you know that deck, there's like an image on the Nine of Swords where there's like it's a dark room. They're sitting up and they're holding their head in their hands. And there's like nine swords on the wall behind them. And it just looks like, to me, I don't read tarot, as you can probably tell, but when I see that card, that's the way I felt on that night, where I was doing this deep, I was in a deep Pisces state. I was, you know, on retreat where you are silent. That's the most Pisces, that's about as Pisces as it gets.
Pisces.
You go totally inward, you know, you're totally in your own, you've given up all of your worldly possessions. You've locked up your iPhone in a metal locker, and for 10 days you're on retreat. And what was going through my mind was like insanity. Like I couldn't sleep because I was worried that Queen Elizabeth had died. And I was like certain that my husband was like on the side of the road somewhere and I was his only emergency contact and no one could find me because they couldn't get another contact in his phone. And like, it was crazy town in my brain.
Yeah.
And you said something about that.
Yeah. I mean, it is a card of kind of crazy town in your brain, but also the knowingness that like the worst imagining and the sweetest dream, neither of them are true necessarily. Mm. You know, that the reality is somewhere intertwined with those, and that it's softer and fuller, or, you know, more alive than the wildest imaginings can be. And to, you know, if you notice in the Rider-Waite-Smith of the image of that card, you know, the figure, technically speaking, the swords couldn't hurt them. They're like floating in this weird way, or like attached to the wall behind them. They're not in position to hurt the person, actually. And that there is a gift, I mean, in all of the swords cards, but especially when we get to the nine, which is all about solitude. You know, it's the card, it's the number that's like ruled by the hermit. So it's that kind of quality of, can you be alone with yourself in that way, and just let it, you know, kind of let this like rise and fall, let all of these kinds of imagery swirl in the mind, and know that eventually you're going to find sort of the still point in the middle of all that, of these kind of wild spikes in the nervous system of like the worst case, the best case, like all of that kind of territory, and that there is turf somehow you're going to wash to shore if you don't resist kind of letting that kind of flow like play out, or just sort mm-hmm. of abiding with it. And it feels very emblematic of the energy of this season too.
And then we're all just basically drifting along in the tides, drifting closer to shore, until on March 20th, when the sun enters Aries, we'll spring out of our primordial sea and become reborn on Earth again.
It's a preview for next season's Astrogast.
Yeah.
So until then, thank you so much for joining us, and we will speak to you at the spring equinox.
I'm so excited. It's our new year.
And with the astrological new year, we're going to have, as we mentioned in the beginning of the episode, lots of new sharings coming up, new astrological tools and learnings and opportunities for you. So if you don't already, it's a great time to sign up for the Numinous newsletter. And you can do that either through Instagram, the profile link, or on the website. And it's a weekly newsletter, or bi-weekly actually, and it gives you all the latest astrological tidbits, tarot, Sandy's amazing horoscopes, lots of other content, and you'll be the first to know about our new offerings that we're going to be announcing.
Yay, talk to you soon.
Bye.
So many juicy insights there, and what rich wisdom from these two amazing astro ladies. As Bess mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, we're also really diving into our offering going forward this year, and into the future, really, with the Numinous. And in response to questions we've been getting since the very beginning of working and creating this site, we want to be offering more tools to help you learn astrology for yourselves. It really is when we begin to speak fluently the language of astrology that we can actually make our own interpretations and relate them directly to what's happening in our lives. And this, I believe, is when astrology becomes its most potent. So please share on social media, send us messages to support@the-numinous.com. Let us know what you want to learn about, what you're most curious about in your astrological studies. I'll be back next week with another incredibly insightful interview with one of the most interesting healers I have met in the past year or so. Look out for that one, and I will see you next time. This podcast features original music and is edited by alloaudio.com. www.alloaudio.com.